Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon. This week's Clubhouse episode with Bernhard Langer is brought to you, of course, by Ogio and the Mutant Travel Bag. All the room you'd want when you travel without sacrifice and the always important security of those precious sticks of yours. The Mutant Travel Bag has an oversized compartment up top to securely wrap around the heads of your clubs, oversized wheels to make walking with it easier, and two large compartments on the sides that, from my experience, can easily hold a couple of pairs of golf shoes, maybe those flip-flops of yours. Traveling back home this week, I had multiple jackets, rain gears, shoes. They all easily fit inside of my Mutant Travel Bag, including my Ogio Cirrus golf bag. The Mutant Travel Bag is perfect for any golfer who spends his or her vacation days chasing the sunset. And oh, by the way, you'll save 20% when you type The Clubhouse in at checkout. The Clubhouse, no spaces, save 20%. Upgrade your travel and keep those golf clubs safe. It makes good sense to me. Ogio.com right now. An impressive weekend. Justin Thomas, 7th win in his last 31 starts. Now number 3 in the world. I'm not really sure how he's number 3. I feel like he should be near 1. He should definitely be ahead of John Rahm, at least in my opinion. But alas, number 3 in the world. Tiger Woods, 12th place finish, best in nearly 3 years. He looked really solid. He looked like he was strategically playing this golf course, which is something we've seen Tiger do successfully over the course of his career. I liked a lot of the choices he had off the tee. Didn't seem to be leaning on the driver as much. A couple of bad swings on the par threes during the bear trap, but everybody struggles with those holes. They're really, really hard. But good signs from Tiger, that's for sure. A lot of positives coming out of these 3 weeks that he played. I know he missed the cut at Riviera, but I just feel like he's building towards something impressive, towards something that can actually work in this world, in this 2018 PGA Tour, and that's what he needs. So if he can keep finding fairways with fairway woods and stinger irons and maybe straighten the driver out a bit, the putting seems to be there, the iron play seems to be there, and if that's the case, I mean, I guess I have to say it, Tiger Woods probably going to be a PGA Tour winner in 2018. Exciting stuff. If you missed the Clubhouse newsletter this week, make sure you signed up for that. Just go to my Twitter page, at Shane Bacon, or at the Clubhouse Pod, and the link's right there up top. You can sign up for it. You get your news in your inbox on Mondays and Wednesdays. It's just an easy way to get information that you need that you don't have to go search the internet for. Who wants to go searching websites with pop-up ads and all that stuff? It's no fun. That's a waste. Well, enough of me. I was excited to get to talk to Bernhard Langer, the two-time Masters champion. Now has 10 Champions Tour major wins. Just seems to be defying age and father time and all that stuff that seems to get anybody that spent 4, 5, 6 years out on the Champions Tour. He's 60 years old, and he's still the best player in that regard. Plus, he thinks he could still compete at the Masters. He said he thinks that in the right conditions, he could maybe add a third green jacket. Of course, at 60, that seems absurd, especially with the distance that Augusta National is these days. But hey, he said firm and fast, he's got a chance. He'll talk about that and plenty more up next. And we welcome into the clubhouse for the first time two-time Masters champion and now a record 10, yes, 10 Champions Tour major wins. Is that weird to hear, Bernhard Langer?
Well, it's a little weird, but it's been a lot of fun. You know, it's always fun to do something no one else has done before, and I'm certainly very blessed to still be at it.
Well, my first question for you, I've been asking some players that have jumped on this, and you're going to have to rack your brain, so this will be a hard one to start. What was the first full set of, like, adult golf clubs you ever owned? Do you remember?
Yes, I certainly do, because I paid for them myself as a 12-year-old, so there were Croydons. Most people don't probably never heard of that name, but make a long story short, I was caddying from 9 years old, and saved some money that we only had four clubs as caddies. It was a 2-wood, a 3-iron, a 7-iron, and a putter with a bent shaft. And so I always wanted my own clubs and eventually had saved enough money to buy those. And that was, it was like Christmas and Easter combined.
How much would you make back in the day for those loops? How much would they pay you for 18 holes?
It was in Germany. It was like 2 Deutsche Marks and 50 Pfennigs for 9 holes, which is about $1 for 9 holes. not very much, but it was a lot for me at the time.
You were happy with it. I've caddied before. Any money you get, anytime they pass you money in your pocket, you got to be happy. Well, you turned professional at 15 years old. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
What were you thinking going pro that early? What was the motivation to go at 15?
Well, it's actually quite simple. I finished school basic schooling after 9 years, and I had to go to work. So the only way for me to stay in golf was actually working, or to play golf was to work in golf, because I didn't have the money. You know, if I just do an average job, they were all private clubs in Germany, I couldn't have afforded it. So I watched the golf instructor, the golf coach we had at our local club, and enjoyed what he was doing, helping people to play better golf. So I became a assistant golf professional, learning the trade, you know, working in the pro shop, giving lessons, and running events and fixing golf clubs, learning English, all that kind of stuff.
And you've been a winner in a staple on the European Tour since really the mid-70s. At what point through the process did you think to yourself, hey, I'm pretty good at this. I've got a chance to make this a serious, you know, a serious long career?
Yeah, it was weird because in Germany there was really never anybody that's done anything on any tour in the 70s and even in the early 80s. So I really didn't know what to expect. But I won a few events amongst the German pros as an assistant pro. And a businessman from Cologne watched me win the German National Close Championship when I was 17. And he said, well, if you have any aspirations to go on the tour, let me know. I might help you financially. And I said, well, I certainly would in about a year from now. So he financed me a little bit. And that was, you know, I figured, well, I'll give it a few years. If it doesn't work out, I can always go back to teaching. And thankfully, it worked out pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much different now. I mean, when you look at the way young players go through the processes now, I mean, it is completely different than what you went through. Paul Azinger has told me numerous times when he went to college to play golf, he couldn't break 80. I mean, now you're seeing these junior players, you know, that have all the game in the world. I mean, what was your game like when you were 15 years old, 17 years old? What was it like compared to maybe a 17-year-old aspiring professional today?
Yeah, I was weird because I was never an amateur, never had a handicap. So I was caddy till 15, and I would be able to play a few caddy tournaments with practice. And I would probably shoot around even par when I was 15. And then I gradually got better. And you know, so when I was 18, I broke par on a regular basis. But what my handicap would have been, I really have no idea.
Well, I mentioned golf changing. When you talk to young players, when you talk to somebody, say a 15, 17, 20-year-old European player that is thinking about taking on the PGA Tour, I mean, this has really turned into kind of a global golf world that we're in right now. What's the advice you give them as they start to move outside of their comfort zone and prepare to play elsewhere?
Well, I would first of all tell them to finish their education, because it's such a fickle game. You know, so many things can go wrong, and there's no guarantee you're going to be successful. And it's very few that are. And it's an extremely difficult profession if you're struggling. If you're not very, very, very good, it's tough, because you're traveling, you're always away. You have expenses at home, expenses away. You keep missing cuts, you know, having no income. And it's just no fun when you're struggling. But if you think you can be one of the best, then I would certainly recommend it to, you know, pursue the dream, give it a few years, and see how it all develops.
Well, you won the Masters in 1985. It was your third start at Augusta. You were a known entity in Germany. You were a known entity around the European Tour. How different did life become following that win, considering it was on, you know, it was on United States soil, and it was a major championship?
Well, it certainly changed a lot in my career. I mean, I was maybe not that well known in America, but I did finish second in the British Open in 81. I won the European Money List in 84, so, you know, people should have heard of me if they watched some of the bigger events. But at the time, golf wasn't as global, and, you know, most people thought, well, the best golfers come from America, which was probably true. You know, we had, you know, Tony Jackman and Seve Ballesteros had already won the British Open and one or two Masters, so he certainly burst on the scene. But it was a big breakthrough for me. I married an American woman in 84 and then won the Masters in 85, which gave me a 10-year full exemption on the tour at the time, which was huge. So I could choose to play in the U.S. or continue play in Europe and worldwide, which I did for the most part. But I also played a little bit more in the U.S. and I had a second home over here, which was great for me, because growing up in Germany in the winter, I was basically no golf for 4 or 5 months.
Well, you started the day back at 86. I mean, you won the Masters in 85. You're just a shot back of Greg Norman in 1986. Of course, everybody knows what happened in 1986. You know, Jack Nicklaus wins arguably the greatest final round in the history of a Masters. Not necessarily the best memory for you, but take us back to that day, being on the golf course, being in the mix there. What was the buzz like around that final round? What were the fans like? I can only imagine it was as crazy as it could be, considering what was going on around you.
It certainly was. You know, there were as loud cheers as you would ever hear around Augusta, and you could just sense something special was happening, and I wasn't sure what it was, but when I looked at the leaderboard, I could see Nicklaus creeping up near the top, and the amazing thing is everybody else kind of faltered. You know, you had Seve Ballesteros there. You had Greg Norman. All he needed was par on the last to go in a playoff. You had Tom Kite, who had about an 8-foot putt on the last to tie as well. There were all sorts of players in the mix, and nobody, you know, kind of finished it off in the very end. And, you know, the bear came through, and he came through roaring, and obviously everybody was thrilled. It was an amazing feat to win his sixth Masters at age 46. And I was, you know, very, very blessed to just slip the jacket on him and shake his hand and say, well done, this is incredible.
When you go back to Augusta and you play practice rounds with young players, how do you describe the golf course to them? Because it is a place, it seems like, that either it fits your game or it doesn't. I mean, we saw Lee Trevino struggle there for a long time throughout his career. And, of course, we have guys like Jack Nicklaus, you, Tiger Woods, Nick Faldo, these types of players that it seems to really fit their golf game. What do you tell them? What's the advice you give players when you play with them for the first time to get around Augusta and hopefully to have similar successes that you've had?
Well, the first thing I would tell them is really pay attention to the greens, where and where you want to miss the green or miss your shot if you miss it. You know, so you have an uphill putt, or if you miss the green, you need to miss it on the correct side where you can get it up and down. Because if you miss it on the wrong side, there's no way you're going to get it up and down unless you make a 40, 50, 60-foot putt. And that's the key. But Augusta has changed dramatically. I think the golf course has really changed in the '80s and '90s, before they made all the changes, the fairways were extremely wide. It was really, I mean, you were upset if you missed a fairway, literally. They were very generous. And it was all about, or mostly about the second shot and sort of the angle of the second shot, but then also mostly the second shot and putting in the short game. And now it's, then they planted 5,000 trees, made it much more narrow and much longer, and now it's a tough driving course on top of second shot is still crucial, and we all know how difficult these greens are.
Yeah, you mentioned the greens. Do you think that people overrate putting when they talk about the Masters? Because we've seen guys that have struggled with their putting win there. I mean, Bubba Watson, not a historically great putter. Sergio Garcia, not a historically great putter. Adam Scott, you know, recently won and not always great on the greens. You said, you know, it's a second shot type of golf course. Do you feel like we head there? Everybody, the media always says, you know, you got to putt well, you got to putt well. But it seems like you don't necessarily have to be a great putter. Almost the greens, you know, make it an equal playing field for everybody.
Well, you still need to make some putts, and you need to avoid three putting and four putting, and you got to make some putts. But the greens are so pure. And all these players you mentioned, they may not be the greatest putters week in and week out, but they all have weeks when they do putt very well. That was their time. When they won there, they putted well on top of hitting the ball great. And that's what it takes.
I wanted to take a quick break to tell you about ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? You're posting your positions to job sites and waiting for the right people to see it. ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. Right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/clubhouse. That's ZipRecruiter.com/clubhouse. ZipRecruiter.com/clubhouse. The smartest way to hire. Okay, back to Bernhard. You're 60 years old. You've been in contention recently at the Masters. So here, I'm going to give you a platform to say it. Do you feel like you still have the game to compete and maybe get yourself in the mix again in 2018 and beyond?
Yeah, I definitely feel I have the game to compete. Yet at the same time, it is very difficult for me because I'm hitting young guys hit 8 and 9 irons, and I can't reach some of the par fives, which they can reach. So I really need to bring my A-plus game, either green and on the greens, got to be really precise, not make any mistakes, or very few. If I just play mediocre, I got no chance. While some of the bombers, they can get away with a bunch of, you know, not so great shots because they have lots of opportunities for birdies if they have a wedge 9 iron, 8 iron in their hand for the second shots, or if they can reach the par fives in two, they're going to make a few eagles or a bunch of birdies.
When you get to the Masters every year at 60 years old now, what conditions do you hope to see? I mean, what conditions do you feel like fits your game the best? You need it to be firm and fast. You need it to be wet. What do you hope to see when you get there to bring out the best in your game and to give yourself a chance?
Well, I'd like to see it firm and fast. It's going to make the golf course much harder, and it's going to make the golf course a little shorter, which I think it favors my game. I'm still going to miss a few greens because I'm still hitting longer clubs in there, but I hopefully will miss them in the right places, as I said, where I have a good chance to get up and down. But if the golf course is wet, it plays extremely long, and you get a lot of mud balls because they mow the fairways from green to tee, so it's like hitting into the grain on every tee shot, and it digs up that Georgia clay, and yeah, that's no fun when you're hitting 3 or 4 iron with a little clump of dirt on the side, and you don't know how much it's going to affect it.
You turned 50 a decade ago. You won your first season on the Champions Tour. You then started to reel off multiple win seasons. It's been 10 years. How are you able to keep doing this? Most people don't do this like you're doing it. They normally have 4 or 5 good years, and then they kind of ride off into the sunset. That's not been the case with you.
No, I'm trying to defeat the odds. You know, there's always been there's always been a few that stood out, whether it's Tom Watson, Hale Irwin. There's always a few that are just a little bit better than the good average, and I'm trying to be one of those. And so far, it's worked out. I'm trying to stay healthy, and I really enjoy the game of golf. I know the clock is ticking, and my years are numbered, so I might as well have fun while it lasts and see what happens.
You mentioned you like to, you're trying to stay fit, trying to stay healthy. What do you do in that regard? I mean, are you a gym rat, just eat healthy, lucky with genetics? What are you doing to stay in the best shape you can stay in?
Yeah, probably a little bit of everything. I enjoy working out. I've done that all my life, even though when I was younger, I enjoyed, you know, in the early days, I would go for runs in the woods in Germany and loved that till my back was so bad that I had to quit jogging. So then I had to, you know, find a stationary bike or something where I wouldn't have the pounding. But I just enjoy, you know, moving and just stretching. I feel better. I have more energy. I'm not as stiff. And I think it just also creates longevity. It's good for you.
Yeah, I mean, if you were working out early in your career, you had to be one of the few guys that did it. Of course, Gary Player, who has been preaching this forever, loves to tell people what they should do with their bodies, what they should do around the game. Tell me your best Gary Player workout story that you have.
Well, it's a bit off color, so I can't tell that one. But there's a bunch of. I mean, every time you run into Gary, it's something. You know, the latest thing, it's been bacon. You can't eat any bacon; it will kill you, man. Don't eat bacon. And then every time I see him, he goes, "Look at me. You know, now I'm 82. I just saw him a week ago, and we were doing a fundraiser together. And he says, Yeah, this morning I did 1,000 push-ups and sit-ups. Look at me. I'm just as fit as a whistle. And then he, you know, kicks his leg and makes a full turn. And the guy is amazing. I mean, when you compare him with most other 80-year-olds, he can still make a very big shoulder most people couldn't do.
Yeah, it's incredible. He cracks me up every time he talks about it. I've had him on a couple times, and he my last name is Bacon. He yells at me just about my last name. I'm like, I can't do anything about it, man. There's nothing I can do. I mentioned you're 60. You've been doing this for a decade. Some guys go to the tour, go to the Champions Tour, and they never have any successes. Some guys don't want to go at all. A name comes to mind is Greg Norman. Why is it that some players want to keep pushing and some players hang it up when they basically don't feel like they can compete on the PGA Tour? It just seems like they don't really have a ton of interest to go to the next level.
You know, that's a great question. I think in the case of Greg Norman, he probably just doesn't want to put in the work anymore and practice. He's had a great career, and he's got other interests. He wants to do other things in life. And he doesn't want to be beating balls and playing tournaments, I guess. I don't know what, you know, Paul Azinger may be similar. He just felt like, well, I've been doing this for 30 years and I've had enough. I'm not willing to be grinding on the driving range and putting in the work to be at the level they want to be. And they don't want to be just mediocre. They were, you know, some of the best there ever has been. And that's, if they play golf, I think they wouldn't want to play at any other level than to be one of the best. And that takes a bit of work.
Yeah, I mean,
no matter how old you are.
Yeah, it seems like, at least in my years of being around some of these older players, it seems there's really two roads. One is they love golf and they'll always love golf. And the other one is golf right. was their job. And I feel like you were in the grouping of you love golf. I mean, do you still really enjoy getting out there and playing, even if it's just 18 holes, you know, at your home course? I mean, is it still a passion for you?
Yeah, most of the time. I mean, I take a lot more time off now than I ever have in my life because I have other interests and I need a break from the game. I've been doing this on tours for 42 years. So it's a very long time. So I'm learning to pace myself. I don't love the game enough to would want to play every single day of the year. I couldn't do that. I need to get away and take breaks. But I love to compete, so I want to get out there, you know, a few times a year and play in tournaments and fill the adrenaline and see if I can pull off the shots. And, you know, I see that a little bit in Nick Faldo. He's got his main focus is television, but when he comes out, he still loves to, he still thinks he can do it, you know, and he works at it and practices and he still has the love for the game.
You're a real calm guy on the golf course. I've followed you during practice rounds. I've been out there, you know, when you're playing in major championships, and your demeanor doesn't change much. What's the maddest you've ever been on a golf course?
Well, that's just to the outside. On the inside, there's a lot going on. So there's some storms happening inside at times. But, yeah, on the outside, I look fairly calm. And I try to be even keel, you know, take the good and the bad because it's going to happen. Once heard a colleague of mine say, you know, you've got to forgive yourself for the bad shots even before they happen because they will happen. And I thought about that and I thought it was very wise. And it's no good, you know, just once you make a double bogey or bogey and then you're mad at yourself for the next hour, that doesn't help you. You got to get over it. And as they say, the next shot is always the most important.
You were never a club thrower? I mean, you never in your early 20s, you know, chucked a 7-iron?
I threw a club, last time I really threw a club in anger, I was about 17. And I was playing just for a little money with my best friends. And I just three-putted from 6 feet or whatever. And I threw I had the putter in my left hand, the short putter, and I was trying to, you know, throw it 80 yards down the fairway or something, and the putter got stuck on my glove and it wouldn't release down the fairway. It released, you know, 20 degrees later, and it was heading straight at my two friends. They were standing about 6 feet from each other and it went right between them. And at that point I said to myself, I swore I would never throw a club again very far. Just, you know, I toss it at the bag, but I would never throw it again, and I haven't, because I could have killed one of them.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to throw a club at a friend, at least mean to be throwing it at your friend. You don't want to accidentally throw it at your buddy.
Yeah,
that's a bad thing. You brought up putting. I just wanted to ask a couple questions about putting with you, because it's always a I don't know if you want to call it a hot button issue, but it's always something that people talk about. Something that I've heard about you from a lot of people that have played a lot of golf with you, they always talk about your integrity. Does it bother you internally if you hear people murmuring about the way you putt, considering you know in your brain that what you're doing is completely fine?
Yeah, it bothers me a little bit, to tell you the truth, because first of all, I would never break the rule. That's just, you know, we play by the rules of golf. That's how we're brought up. And I know when the rules changed that I had to change my putting stroke from anchoring to non-anchoring. And I found a way to not anchor it and still use the long putter. And my first thing was to talk to the rules officials and show them how I putt and explain to them what I'm doing and what it looks like. And they said, you're totally within the rules. You're not anchoring. You're fine. And the same thing with, you know, I play in the Masters every year. There's some of the best rules officials in the world. And I've played in the British Open and the Senior British Open and the PGA, Senior PGA Championship. So I'm constantly on TV because I've been playing fairly well. So I'm always under scrutiny. And, I mean, I would be stupid to be breaking the rule. Plus, that's not me. I try to be a man of integrity. And as I said, I would never do that, and I'm not. I know I'm not anchoring, and I can show it to anybody who wants to see it.
Yeah, have you ever had an open dialogue with other players that maybe have just come up to you and asked? I mean, is that something that happens ever with you, that somebody says, just show me what you're doing? I mean, again, like you said, you're on TV all the time. You're basically the Tiger Woods, if you will, of the Champions Tour, always on TV. They're showing your shots all the time, whether they be good or bad. I mean, do you have an open dialogue with people if they come up to you and just ask what's happening?
Of course, but it's the funny thing is it's never the players, you know, that I play with. It's people, I don't know, that are writing stories or commentating on TV, or I don't know who it is, but it's really not the players, because they can watch me. They can stand next to me, you know, 6 feet away, and they're paired with me, and they can see that I'm not anchored.
Do you ever mess around with putting? I mean, I know you've been a guy that earlier in your career you struggled a little bit with putting. That's obviously why you went to the long putter. Do you ever pull out a short putter these days and just mess around with it on the green? Do you ever pull out other methods and just see how they feel?
Oh, yeah, I did a lot of that over the years. Well, I had the yips 4 times in my career and went to different putting grips, you know, cross-ended. Then I put it against my forearm like Kuchar does now for years. I started that a long time ago. I actually won my second Masters that way. And then eventually, even though I thought I would never go to the long putter, I tried it eventually and persevered with it and finally learned how to do it. So, yeah, every once in a while, certainly about 2 years ago when the anchoring ban came into effect, I tried all sorts of putters, short, medium, different grips, different weights, different styles. And I actually played a few competitive rounds with different ways. But at that point, I was already using the long putter for 17 years and put thousands and thousands of hours into that method. So it felt easier for me to not anchor with a long putter than to go to the short putter. But, you know, I could probably work out a short putter if I would put thousands of hours in, but that's hard to do at my age.
You don't want to be messing around with that at 60. That's no fun. You don't want to be on the putting green for 2 hours a day messing with a new putter. Do you ever yell at Matt Kuchar when they call it the Kuchar method? You tell him, I want a master's doing this before you were even born?
No. I've talked to him about it. You know, I see him at the Masters and the Players' Championship or a couple other events here and there. And, you know, I'll talk to him a little bit and see what he's thinking and how much loft he has and all that kind of stuff, how long his putter is. But he's a lot taller than me. So, no, he's aware that I was the one started it, but it works very well for him. And there's another guy who does it very well. That's Søren Kielsen from Denmark. He's had a lot of success, and he's putted that way for probably 15, 20 years now.
Yeah, you need to tell Kuchar he's got to give you some royalties. Tell him you need a percentage of every check he makes if he's doing that. Tell him you laid the groundwork.
Certainly afford it, yeah.
Last question for you.
I want to play ping pong with him.
No, dude, I do not want to play ping pong against that guy. Are you a ping pong player? Can you compete with him?
Well, I don't know. I hear he's really good, so I would probably lose, but it would be fun just to see how good he is.
Well, my last question is, I mean, you know, we've gone 26 minutes, and I haven't mentioned Tiger Woods. That's got to be a record. Tiger back playing. Do you pay attention to that? I mean, do you watch and see how he's done? Are you interested to see, you know, if he's able to come back, if he's able to compete at this point?
Of course. I love golf, and I watch it on TV, and, you know, I hear the news and all that stuff. And, yeah, when Tiger plays, it's news. He's been away from the game for most of the last few years, and it's great to have him back and to have him healthy. And I hope he does well. Early on, I always thought he would win a few more majors or in tournaments. And lately, with all the injuries he's had, it's becoming more and more of a question mark. But there's still signs of brilliance there. So it's just a matter of whether he thinks he can do it and whether he can put four rounds together at the right time.
All right, I lied. This is my last question. You said you watch golf on TV. I do commentating for golf. I do some of the USGA events and such. What's your biggest pet peeve that golf broadcasters do or say that you wish they would change?
They kind of focus on the same guys all the time. I would love to see them do what they do in Europe, where they show 30, 40 different players. You know, they sometimes just focus on three or four guys, and they show them standing around waiting for the group ahead to get out of the way or to line up a putt or whatever it may be, when they could show two or three other guys hit a shot somewhere else and just show more people. You know, there's 150 guys playing. Why are you just focusing on four or five of them? That's always been one of my issues over here.
And if you paid $50 for a ticket, you're going to go out to a golf tournament by yourself on a day, maybe have a beer, maybe have a hot dog, and follow a guy. Who are you paying $50 to go watch? Who's the one player you want to see in person play?
That all depends. You know, in the years ago, I would watch Gary Player, who was my golfing idol, and obviously Arnie and Jack. Trevino, I thought, was fascinating. I thought he was one of the greatest ball strikers ever. Nowadays, you know, when I missed a cut at the Masters, I would go out with my kids and watch Rory a couple of years ago, and because they wanted to see him. I've seen most of these guys. So, but you know, there's some that are just like Justin Rose or Adam Scott have beautiful golf swings. So it depends what you want to see. You know, you want to see technique and a pure golf swing, or you want to see a Jim Furyk who does it a little bit different, but still very successful.
Well, Bernard, I appreciate you taking the time. Good luck this week. I know you're headed to Tucson. That's where I went to college, by the way. So have some fun. It always brings back good memories for
me.
And have a great year. It'll be exciting to watch again. I know you have goals and expectations for the season. So we'll be watching you, and hopefully we'll catch up at the end of the year.
Yep. Look forward to it. Thanks very much for having me on. Take care.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole. It's in the hole.
Big thanks to Bernhard Langer for joining me on the Clubhouse. First time he's been on. Very interesting. Crazy to think how professional golf used to be and how you could be a club pro and come up that way. And now it's, you know, sponsors invites and collegiate golf and getting known and being seen on multiple channels. It's just a different time and different age, of course. I love a couple of the points he made about some of the older guys that have decided not to keep playing as they got closer to 50. Maybe not as much of a passion of theirs as it is for Bernhard, but he continues to be impressive. It'll be fun to watch him at the Masters and beyond. Just a reminder to check out ogio.com. I mentioned the Mutant Travel Bag. I'm telling you, the thing is awesome. It's huge. It's safe. It's lightweight. The wheels are great. I get it around airports easily. Keeps my club safe. Haven't had one issue with it. And I love how big the compartments are, so you can pack a whole bunch of stuff in that thing. Sometimes if I'm traveling to a place and I'm going to be there for a couple days for golf, I'll just throw all my stuff in my golf bag. I'm sure the airlines hate that. But Ogio provides a golf travel bag that can do that. That's the Mutant Travel Bag. Use the Clubhouse at checkout. It'll save you 20%. Free money. You get back and you get a great travel bag. Trust me, you'll love it. Many thanks to you guys for listening. If you love the podcast today, make sure you write a review and tell your friends about it. And let me know. I've been sending out some Clubhouse koozies lately. All you really got to do is go to the Instagram account @TheClubhousePod and send me a message, and I'll send you a koozie. You don't have to do anything. Nothing. It's free. It's no offer code or coupon code or anything like that. Just email me your address and you'll get it. Hope you guys have a great week. Exciting stuff with the WGC headed up. And then we got some bigger events through Florida over the next few weeks. Get out and play a little golf this week. Make a birdie or two.